Okay.
And then we'll do a roll call.
Okay.
Good afternoon, December 9th, 2021, 12 p.m. Addressing the Traffic Melt Board meeting. I'd like to take a moment to introduce our legal counsel for the board, Mr. Larson. And then our executive director is Ms. Gail Anthony. And if we could do a quick roll call, Gail, to see who we got.
Absolutely. Dr. Sadlick?
Here.
Dr. Popiel?
Here.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Here.
Ms. Gallen?
Here.
Dr. Campbell?
Here.
Dr. Spatt?
Present.
Dr. Rubin?
Present.
We have quorum.
Good. Okay, let's move on to number two, declarations of conflicts of interest. We've received all those, and I'll roll past that one unless there's any changes. I'm going to go on to the disability statement. I'm going to read this very briefly. In accordance to the open meeting law, the board has a disability policy that prohibits any type of disorderly conduct that disrupts this board from carrying out its business. Those violating this policy will be asked once to modify their behavior. If you cannot do so, we'll disconnect you from the phone. Number four, I'd like to take 4A, and need the board's permission to take 4A and run this all the way through 4S.
Dr. Rubin.
Dr. Rubin. And then can I get a second?
Dr. Campbell will second.
Dr. Popiel. Okay.
Mr. Chair, members, apologies. This is Justin with AG's office. I think I might have missed it, but was the motion to approve the items on the consent agenda from items 4A through S?
Yes, sir.
Okay, sorry.
I think we got a first and second.
Mm-hmm.
So can we do roll on that real quick, Gail?
Yes. Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Dr. Popiel?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Motion carries. That takes us into number 5A, and this will be case number 21187, and Dr. Zachary Poteet, P-O-T-E-T, initial interview. Dr. Poteet, do you have legal counsel?
Good afternoon, Dr. Sadlick. This is David Williams. I'm counsel for Dr. Poteet, and he is with me here at my office.
I need to interrupt. This is Dr. Rubin. Dr. Sadlick, I need to recuse for reasons of professional issues.
Okay. No, Dr. Rubin has recused. It's been noted prior. And, you know, can you read us the intro on case number 21-187?
Yes. Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, on July 7th, 2021, the State of Arizona Naturopathic Physicians and Medical Board received a complaint from RC relating to his wife, Casey. Casey was being treated by respondent for breast cancer. She passed away on May 6, 2021. On July 9th, 2021, respondent was notified of the complaint and asked to respond. A subpoena for the medical records for Casey was included. The response was received on August 12th, 2021. According to the records, Casey was a 60-year-old female at the time of passing on May 6, 2021, who had a history of stage 4 breast cancer, originally diagnosed in late summer of 2017. She resided in Canada with her husband and originally presented to Invita Medical Center for treatment in 2017. Dr. Poteet was the treating physician at the time. Invita also referred Casey to other providers outside of the clinic for additional treatment. Part of the additional treatment she received included a chemoimmunotherapy injection and SIPI procedure. According to the response, Casey had a positive response to the treatment she received and returned to her home in Canada. In February of 2021, Casey again contacted Invita for additional treatment due to further progression of the disease. Dr. Poteet was the treating physician again, and Casey was again referred outside to outside providers for consultation and possible additional SIPI treatments. On May 5th, 2021, Dr. Aga D.O. performed a SIPI procedure on Casey. According to Dr. Aga's chart notes, there were no complications or bleeding following the procedure, and Casey was released to her husband for home care the same day. Unfortunately, around 11 p.m. on May 6th, Casey passed away while being cared for by her husband.
Dr. Poteet, will you be speaking, or will your legal counsel do so?
I'll be speaking. I mean, Dr. Poteet certainly is able to answer questions.
Okay. Go ahead, counselor.
Thank you. Members of the board, we provided a fairly comprehensive response to the board. I'm not necessarily going to repeat everything that's in it. I think Ms. Anthony's investigative report captures the majority of the timeline of events that occurred between May 5th and May 6th. It is unfortunate that Casey ultimately passed. It's important to keep in mind that the patient did have an advanced case of metastatic breast cancer. The CIPI procedure was designed to alleviate and hopefully provide her a greater quality of care and quality of life. She was referred to Dr. Aga, and pretty much from the point of the referral to Dr. Aga, Dr. Poteet had no ongoing involvement in the patient's care between May 5th and May 6th, which is really, when you read the complaint filed by her husband, RC, really deals with the post-care follow-up between the on-call staff at Invita and Dr. Aga's office. It's important to keep in mind, again, with respect to Dr. Poteet, his involvement, he had no involvement at that point from the post-care follow-up, simply because he was off. He was not in office during that time. There were other members of the Invita medical team that were available, including Dr. Kaufman, as well as Dr. Awesomes, who both provided some sort of post-care treatment. Dr. Awesomes made a medication adjustment, and then Dr. Kaufman was the on-care physician who was available. The other thing to keep in mind is that because Dr. Aga was the one primarily doing the SIPI procedure, the patient was always instructed to contact his office if there was an issue, and then obviously to contact Invita's medical staff if there was a backup issue, or if there was an emergency, ultimately to contact 911, which my understanding is that RC ultimately did that. Ms. Anthony's report also raises an issue that Invita or a related Invita entity, and there's two different Invita entities. There's an Invita Medical Center, and then there is another entity called Invita Interventional Radiology, which is not part of this case, with Dr. Poteet. Ms. Anthony indicated in her report that Invita is providing the CIPI procedure in-house. That relates to two different parts. One is the Invita IR, which is a separate entity that does the interventional radiology now as one of the services available to treated Invita. But the other part is the what I would call the drug cocktail that is used as part of the infusion process. The patient pays for two different services, as I understand it. One is the drug cocktail, which is essentially prescribed by the medical director, who is an oncologist. And he is the provider that is involved in that. Dr. Poteet has no involvement in that. And so the patient is charged for that service. And so there is a note in the report that there may have been some sort of pecuniary outcome in this. The only pecuniary outcome relates to Invita charges for essentially coming up with the drug cocktail, which has been provided to Dr. Aga, which he uses as part of the infusion process. So there are two charges to the patient. Dr. Aga charges for the actual procedure, and Invita Medical Center charges for the actual preparation of the drug cocktail. Dr. Poteet's involvement has nothing to do with that part of the patient's case. He has no pecuniary outcome. He has no ownership interest in Invita Medical Center. He's simply a salaried employee of Invita Medical Center. So with respect to the potential allegations here, he performed exactly did what he was supposed to do. There's no evidence here to show that he violated any of the professional standards or board regulations, including those set forth in 32.1501 subsection 31. While there may be that the board may have concerns about other people involved in the patient's care post on May 5th or May 6th, that doesn't really involve Dr. Poteet. And we would ask, due to the fact that he had limited involvement here, while the patient's outcome is unfortunate, that Dr. Poteet did what he was supposed to do, and we would ask that the board dismiss the complaint.
Thank you. Counselor, Dr. Poteet, who paid you? Is that Avita Medical or is that Avita Radiology?
Avita Medical.
They pay you, okay. Are you on salary or salary plus production?
Nope, only salary.
Okay. And run by for me, and if John Doe comes in, that may be a CPA, may be a procedure that would be applicable to them. Tell me how that, if you could start from the very beginning, how does that work exactly? They contact via email and or phone, and then from there they're triaged by a front-end medical assistant. And can you give me the details from that point?
Yeah, I'm going to let Dr. Poteet answer that.
Sure.
Okay, so just general perspective of Invita is a patient could reach out from referral from another physician or from a web. That would go to a patient care educator. A patient educator would potentially, if they seem like a fit, go to a patient care coordinator. From a patient care coordinator, that gets referred to a physician and my physician, where we would do an initial consultation with the patient and run lab analysis. From that lab analysis, there will be discussion about Invita treatment. From an imaging analysis, whether we have updated imaging, that would be determined if we need to make a referral for an image analysis to determine if there's a interventional radiology procedure done. So with that referral, that would be imaging sent to the IR, and then ultimately a evaluation done to determine if a procedure is safe and indicated. And then from there, then I would make a referral to interventional radiology, or essentially to Invita medical directors for treatment. And then my primary role is essentially the primary care or the educator for the patient during these treatments, either with Invita medical or ultimately IMED in this case, or now more likely Invita IR.
Okay. And Invita IR obviously has ultrasound. Do you have fluoroscopy there also?
With fluoroscopy, I do believe we have IMED had that, as well as Invita IR, but definitely ultrasound.
Okay. And then is the radiology division of the company, are they the ones that are basically employing the interventional radiologists?
Yes. To my understanding, Invita IR is a separate company from Invita Medical.
Yes. So, Dr. Satellite, this is David Williams again. So there's the companies have a division of responsibility. There's the Invita Medical Center, separate LLC entity. That's where the naturopathic integrative care of the patient is housed, and that's run by a separate medical director, and that Dr. Poteet and a handful of other naturopathic interventional practitioners work within that group. And then a separate referral would be made to the interventional radiology LLC, and that practice is run by Dr. David Medina. And then Dr. Joss Wirtz are the two interventional radiologists that are employed by Invita IR.
Okay, got it. Once the patient, Dr. Poteet, goes through decides, okay, this particular type of carcinoma is treatable or could be treatable with an interventional technique, how many of those happen? And then my other part of that question would be, who follows them up in between? and you feel as though the ball possibly got dropped in between therapeutics in terms of therapeutic plans for the patient.
So, Dr. Sadler, can I ask you to clarify? So at the time, this particular patient, the KC and RC case, this particular patient was seen, there was no interventional, there was no Invita IR running at that point. So Invita was referring to Dr. Aga, who has no relationship with Invita at that point. He's completely 100% separate. So are you asking now how does it happen, or how did it happen then, just to clarify?
Yeah, and that's a great question. Dropping back to, it appears to be that Dr. Agua was basically an independent contractor for the service at that time. He was referred, the patient was referred to him for that procedure. I guess my question comes into, since the referral was made, the patient still remained over at Invita Medical. Who was assuming that care of that patient? It was probably Dr. Poteet, I assume, correct?
So, yes, in the example of patient KC is that once the referral to IMED was made and plans were determined for schedule, we developed a supportive care plan. So there were IV nutraceuticals that were prescribed by Invita Medical, and the role was in a supportive position. With that, to the question of the ball was dropped, so after reviewing this case, after I performed a lab review, she had assessments, she had the procedure done. When husband RC called in the next day, he was recommended to bring patient Casey in by Dr. Awesome's and Nurse Brittany and denied. He denied that. And then the following evening, I was not on call. That was Dr. Coffin, and he did receive a call where at that time, husband RC had stated that patient Casey was doing better. And then unfortunately, she did pass a couple of hours after that conversation. So she was had designed supportive care. They did not come in for treatment. They were recommended, and there was interaction with both IMED and Invita Medical Center in the hours and days between the procedure and ultimately her passing.
Okay. And the work you're saying at this point is being done in-house by interventional radiology by the separate division of Invita.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily call it in-house. It's still a separate entity, but there is Invita IR is the referral is the primary referral source for interventional radiology treatment. The patients, and this might be more appropriate to the next case, we don't necessarily refer to Dr. Aga anymore. There are some things probably beyond the scope of what we need to discuss here, but there were some issues ongoing with Dr. Aga where we felt like, or at least Invita Medical and the staff there felt like it was probably best to refer to other partners at that point.
Okay. Board members, let me start off with you, Dr. Poteet, if you don't mind, for questions for Dr. Poteet or his counsel.
Sure.
Mr. Williams.
Dr. Poteet, how long have you been at Invita Medical?
I've been with Invita Medical since November 2016.
Okay. What's your experience been with this particular procedure as far as patient outcomes as well as side effects that are often seen?
Good question. So we definitely have seen pain following procedures. And if I'm comparing specifically to chemoembolization to liver lesions, we've seen pain. We've seen thrombi, and we've seen ultimately, no benefit of treatment and continued progression of disease. I've not seen any patients that had where we believe that the CIPI procedure was the cause of death, but we have seen complications following, as an example, in KT's case.
Okay. And with, I guess, the interesting, would you say at this point that
the burden falls on Dr. Aga regarding follow-up and inability to, I guess, help manage this case. I guess I'm just trying to figure out kind of what you think happened. I know you guys are obviously referring out. However, clearly you're very involved in the patient's care. So I guess in the conversation you had with the husband, you also mentioned some, I don't know, deficiencies potentially in communication. So I guess just kind of talk me through how you saw this communication going poorly, lack of response, and ultimately the burden of this patient's care being put on the husband in the hours following the procedure.
Yes, I think that's a good thing to address. So when I met with husband RC, I was definitely in the grieving process, but I think I was missing some important information when I met with him. After I met and we met as a team to discuss it, I learned a few more things. An example of that is what I already referred to, is that I did not realize that Dr. Awesome's had to encourage the patient to come in, and I did not realize that in the communication with Dr. Coffin and husband RC that when that phone call happened, he felt like patient Casey was doing better. So that was news to me. Another big thing that I learned afterwards is husband RC actually submitted to his patient care coordinator his medications he'd been giving to the patient and the dosing. And I didn't realize at that time that through that first night, he had been giving her the oxycodone 10 milligrams every 2 hours. So that was a major concern for me afterwards, especially through this complaint, learning that her ultimate cause of death per the pathologist maybe pulmonary edema, which is something that, of course, is documented with opiate medication. So I think that ultimately that answers the question, that the patient absolutely was in a lot of pain. The husband was absolutely trying to help out with that pain. But the complications of the treatment of that pain was a major contributing factor to her death. And that, of course, is something that I did not prescribe. The only discussion of that, I know Dr. Awesome's in reviewing it the day after, it recommends that she does take the medications as prescribed by Dr. Aga. And then, yes, ultimately, the management of pain following the procedure fell on Dr. Aga. Our role, like I said, was the IV nutrition therapy and ultimately to assess the patients after the procedure.
I might have missed it in the paperwork. Was the patient's husband ever in touch with Dr. Aga? I didn't really see that there was any recommendations ever made from Dr. Aga after this procedure.
This is David Williams. My recollection is that he was able to contact Dr. Aga's nurse and was essentially told to continue doing what they were doing, and that if there were other issues, that they should contact 911 if Dr. Aga wasn't immediately available or someone at Invita wasn't available. I know there was some concern that there wasn't a lot of immediate availability of Dr. Aga and his staff, but my recollection review of the patient care notes, at least the notes that we have, we don't have Dr. Aga's file, but my understanding is at least RC did indicate that he was able to reach someone at Dr. Aga's office. I don't have a specific recollection as to what anything beyond that, other than I think if there's another emergency and they can't get a hold of us, contact 911.
Okay. And Dr. Aga, Dr. Pokey, you had mentioned, you kind of gave me a summary of the procedure itself, I guess. I guess the big question to me is, in your experience, do the pros of this procedure outweigh the cons?
And if I'm basing that on my experience with other patients receiving the procedure, then yes. Yes, absolutely. I can say confidently that we've seen more pros than cons. I would say that patient KC is the exception to the rule.
And can you explain exactly, I know there was commentary that there was payment made to Invita for the drug cocktail and then payment made to Dr. Aga separately. Can you explain what this drug cocktail is and exactly?
Yes.
And I know it's probably individualized patient by patient, but it sounds like there's quote unquote proprietary info or proprietary things being infused essentially.
Sure. So essentially, you know, the C and the I and the CIPI procedure are chemotherapy and immunotherapy. So the cocktail usually includes the chemotherapy that is embedded with the embolization beads for the embolization part of it. There is also typically direct injection of the chemotherapies as indicated from the lab investigation. And then typically there is an immunotherapy done. A good example of that one would be interleukin-2 or Proleukin, which is a cytokine used to induce an immunological response to the lesions that are treated. And so that is essentially the CIPI procedure in a nutshell, is that the chemotherapies and the immunotherapies that are indicated per the testing.
Okay. I think that's all my questions for now.
Thank you, Dr. Popeil. Ms. Tibbetts?
I just have one question. Is the pulmonary edema something that you have seen in other patients with this treatment? I know that you mentioned that it could be caused by the opioids, but I just wanted to know if you've ever seen that with other patients with this treatment.
In all honesty, I have not.
Thank you.
Gallon?
Nothing from me at the moment.
Dr. Campbell?
Most of my questions have already been answered. I would like to hear from Dr. Petit respective to his communication with the other treating physician in the hours that led up to the patient's demise. Dr. Petit, do you feel that there could have been more communication between you and the other treating physician that may have improved patient care in any way? How do you feel that your performance was respective to communicating effectively with the other physician regarding the treatment of the patient?
So are we discussing specifically Dr. Agama's case or my colleagues, Dr. Awesome's and Dr. Kaufman?
Dr. Awesome.
Say it again, Dr. Aga?
Correct, Dr. Oscar.
So good question. I would say that our communication, our ability to communicate with Dr. Aga is one of the reasons why we've moved away from working with IMED for that. So I do believe that's part of it. With this specific case, I think it was a pretty acute timeline. You know, with my communication was primarily with the team on staff, and in all honesty, I was in complete shock in the outcome when I found out on the morning following her passing. So, I knew that, there was pain. I had consulted with Dr. Awesome's about, the pain medications, the anti-inflammatories that were used as far as supportive. And so I'd say in general, yes, the communication with Dr. Aga, could improve, but with this case, I wasn't necessarily alerted that I needed to communicate with him the day after, that there was anything, outside of the typical pain picture.
I see. Okay. Mr. Chairman, that's all I have for now.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Campbell. Dr. Spath.
Yes, this is Dr. Spath. Dr. Petit, I just want to clarify something. So, who actually makes the cocktail that you talk about? Is it a different division in the Anvita? Is it, I just want to get the guideline on how this works.
Yeah, so it's officially prescribed by the medical director. I believe in this case, I have to look it up. This is either Dr. Klein or Dr. Gail Roberts, Dr. Matthew Klein or Dr. Gail Roberts, that made the prescription for the treatment. That goes to pharmacy, and then pharmacy submits the meds to Dr. Aga for delivery. So the answer to your question is the medical director is who makes the prescription for this treatment.
Oh, okay. And since you've been working there, how many cases have you, just give me just a ballpark. So how many cases have you followed after they did this procedure? on a patient.
So how many, you said how many cases like this have I been involved with?
Yes.
So if we're talking chemoembolization to the liver, I've probably been involved with about, I'd have to look specifically, but my first thought would be about 15 cases similar to this.
Okay. And I'm just curious, so what was the outcome on them beside the hematoma and, you know, on the, but well, what, just give me an idea, what's the outcome that so far that you have experienced with?
Yes, we've seen positive outcomes. We've seen scans, whether that's a PET CT or CT scan, where we've seen decrease in the size of the lesion, sclerosis, as well as less metabolic uptake on a PET CT. So yes, we've seen positive outcomes through this procedure, especially when it comes to liver lesions.
Okay, and then when you have a when you on call, when the Kaufman is on call, do you guys talk to each other with this work? Since you being the on call doctor with the Kaufman, how does this work with the patient?
Yeah, good question. So typically the role is the physicians all take a different day of the weekday, and then we have a rotation. We all take different weekends. As far as communication amongst us is, if a physician feels they can't answer the question, need more insight, absolutely we would reach out to our colleagues to help answer questions before we get back to the patient. In this case, Dr. Kaufman did not. And as I understand, talking with Dr. Kaufman is when he took that initial call, that husband RC felt the patient was doing better, and there was not an emergent situation, and then the next call he received, the patient had passed. So, yes, we can communicate, but ultimately it's as needed by the patient who received the call, whether or not he feels this needs to be more informed.
Okay. Now, I just got a follow-up on what Dr. Papio asked you earlier. I just want to get an idea on how your procedure would follow up on patients, even though I know that Dr. Mm-hmm. I was the one who did the procedure, but automatically you and Dr. Kaufman, I guess, end up being the person who they call. Now, have you, so how does this work? I'm still confused. Like, let's say after the procedure with that invasive procedure that you did, now do the patient and the family member get the instruction on who they need to call if there's an adverse event, or do they just call the next time? I guess you just give me an idea on that.
So good question. So, I believe both teams, both the IR and Invita Medical, will instruct the patients as far as the support after the procedure. You know, first and foremost, of course, it's the IR's decision to determine whether or not the procedure can be done outpatient and safely send the patient home. And then from there, yes, as I've discussed, the patient was scheduled to come back into the clinic for lab draw, physical exam, and ultimately assessment post the procedure. With that said, is this process, the patient received the procedure. The next day when the husband RC called in, we have a floor physician who handles the day-to-day things that come up with patients on the floor or called to come in. That was Dr. Awesomes who handled that with patient KC. And then as discussed, is that was not my night of the week to be on call. The call that went after hours went to Dr. Kaufman as part of that. So I do believe we were there as parts of support. Like I said, as far as scheduling, phone calls, encouragement to come to the clinic, that was the supportive care was there for the patient.
Okay. And so my next question would be, so what I know that Casey and Ozzy, her husband, apparently, so I just wondering, why would her husband name you in this case instead of Dr. Kaufman? coughing, no asthma. I'm just curious, what was your relationship regarding why you think he named you in this case?
Good question. So ultimately, as you saw, that patient Casey and I have been working since 2017. I had a very good rapport with her and her husband. That was something that we had, you know, many conversations over the years between medical and essentially life. And so I became very close with the family. In these circumstances, you know, I as soon as I heard, I called husband RC and expressed my condolences. We had a very emotional conversation that morning afterwards. And then essentially, husband RC decided to invest in independent pathology to determine cause of death. And so he was you know, the Phoenix metropolitan area by himself for 1 week. And when I met with him the following week, he was very angry, very understandably. I mean, he absolutely was angry, consistent with the grief process, and who wouldn't be angry with the circumstances he was in by himself and losing his wife in those circumstances. And so I think that absolutely, I've been the face for Envita per the you know, the KC family, and that's something that I ultimately understand why he put his anger on me in this circumstance, because of the ultimate adverse outcome.
Okay, thank you for that.
Dr. Spatt, this is David Williams. Just in one follow-up to your question, although it's not, excuse me, within the board's jurisdiction, there, when we received the complaint from Ms. Anthony, I think there may have been a concurrent complaint filed, I think it's with the osteopathic board regarding Dr. Aga. So Dr. Poteet was not the only recipient of regulatory responses. So that it seems like RC has engaged multiple licensing boards to address what he felt like were concerns in the process. So to the extent the board does have questions beyond maybe the scope of Dr. Poteet's involvement, I think you can probably rest assured that there are other licensing boards that are also involved vis-a-vis maybe Dr. Aga and his involvement in the case as well.
Okay, thank you. That's all I have, Mr. Cameron.
Thank you, Dr. Spatt. Dr. Poteet, a couple quick questions. On the certificate of death, the primary item was the acute pulmonary event. Did the patient complain to anybody that evening about being severely dyspneic, difficulty breathing, difficulty in different positions, sitting, et cetera? Do you recall any of that?
So, not specifically. I know that in discussion with husband RC, mostly the concern was pain and some weakness. I don't remember any charting from Dr. Austin's or Coffin that has been reported of shortness of breath or dyspnea at that time.
Okay. And had you taken that call of having a severely dyspneic patient, where would you have gone from that point?
Yes, that would be an immediate ER referral.
Okay. And then my next question is there clear differentiation of patient John Doe comes in from the day they are accepted at Envita? Is there one person that is basically the primary assigned to that patient that gets follow-up daily, et cetera, on that patient?
Good question. So I would say essentially the answer is no. We do work in a team. As discussed, is that if I were assigned a patient, I'm usually doing follow-up appointments as far as typically, you know, lab review, imaging review, things of that nature. But of course, as discussed, there's usually a floor physician with acute things that come up. There's follow-ups with the medical directors. There's most of our patients are being seen 5 days a week, and so there's daily assessment by the nurses. So absolutely, I'd say the short answer is in Vita is a team environment, not necessarily just only specifically working with one physician.
Dr. Sadlak, this is David Williams. There also is the patient care coordinator, which is the, although they're a non-licensed professional, they are the primary point of contact on an ongoing basis with the patient because, as Dr. Poteet indicated, the patients are in the facility for outpatient procedures on a fairly constant basis, setting aside this particular procedure. And it's typically the care coordinator, which is the first level of patient contact. And then obviously the other team professional members are involved on a fairly consistent basis.
Okay. And Dr. Petit, is there any talk of Invita, for example, I understand the team approach, but is there any talk in the future of having it assigned to obviously one lead team doctor and then obviously all the other team members on call, et cetera, you know, contribute, but one person that would be kind of the spearhead that the team members could go to or have the ability to know this is our team leader?
Well, good question. So if the question is that do we expect every single question to always go to that team leader to ultimately quarterback everything? No, but is there typically a team leader where, is staying informed on everything, is helping make decisions, is, leading the tumor board meetings and everything? Yes, the answer is yes. There's typically someone that has all the pieces, but it's not typically one that has to answer every single question.
And what's your typical caseload per week?
Good question. Typical is we keep about 15 patients on the floor, and by the floor I mean a patient that is established with Invita, typically at least receiving IVs 3 days a week. A typical treatment program could last around 12 weeks, and there's usually about 15 patients of that on the floor that are being seen as a organized follow-up every other week during that time.
So per month, that would be what?
As far as follow-ups total?
Roughly.
Yeah, about 30 follow-ups done with the patients on the floor.
Okay, is that your load or the total clinic load?
That's I would say kind of the number that's been determined that the physician can still provide good care. It's one of those things where it's a pretty light load, below 15 and pretty heavy above that. So 15 is not a hard and fast rule, but I'd share any point auditing that many of the physicians in my role have about 15 patients on the floor.
Okay. And before you became employed with Invita, what was your prior training?
So Invita was actually my residency. 2017 and 18 was my residency per National University of Natural Medicine in Portland. And so technically, degree and boards are from 2016. So Invita has been my only physician role as a professional.
Dr. Papil, let me kick it back to you and let me go through real quick and see if anyone has any additional comments.
I don't have any additional comments for Dr. Poteet. I guess I'm just wondering or worried that, does the bigger entity of Invita, do they have everything dialed in regarding, optimizing patient care, optimizing follow-up, and then, are all the treatments, you can't assume every treatment is safe, but just, are these not legitimate treatments, just are these necessary treatments and, pros and cons? I guess that's my concern is just as a medical center, is everything being done, the way that it should be? And obviously cancer is not my specialty, so I can't comment on the treatments, more so the patient care, and it seems like it generally is good, but I guess I'm just slightly concerned with, you know, somehow some of these situations have gone down. And, you know, like obviously I'm not bringing the other case into this, but there seems to be, you know, maybe an issue with some of these referrals from Invita Medical.
Doctor, this is David Williams. Let me, obviously Invita's not here. I'm not representing Invita in this procedure. I have been fairly involved in these two cases, and I feel like I've gotten a pretty good insider's view of how that organization works. And I've represented a lot of integrative physicians across multiple health boards, some that do what I would call cutting edge in integrative work, some in the area of cancer, some in the area of other types of pathologies and diseases. And I think my personal experience has been is that I think Invita is very proactive with their totality of patient care as far as the patient care experience, as well as somewhat being on the cutting edge of research, making sure a lot of the things that they do are safe, peer-reviewed, and effective treatments that benefit the patient. So I can understand the reaction that you may be having, especially when you're looking at these two cases, considering the length of time that entity has been involved in business. I've met with the medical directors. I've had an opportunity to, so I'm not necessarily trying to vouch for them, but I can tell you within the organization, from the medical director on down to the ownership group, the things that you are raising concerns about are certainly things that are always at the forefront of things that they are always trying to improve. And I think they would tell you that they feel like they have they run a pretty tight ship as far as how they run their operation.
Thank you. I appreciate the summary on that. I don't have any other questions at this time.
Thank you. Ms. Tippett?
I don't have a question quite yet. I'm looking through some of the documentation so I don't ask something that's right before me. So skip me for now.
Okay. And Ms. Gallon?
I don't have a question at the moment. I'm just listening to what's being said.
Dr. Campbell?
Nothing further, thank you.
Dr. Spad?
I don't have anything
out there. Thank you. Dr. Sadalek, this is Dr. Mobile. I didn't know if the complainant was on the line and or needed to comment as well.
Yeah, that was my next question. Dr. Poteet, basically, you know, when you read, unfortunately, the certificate of death in this particular situation, there's hypertension, there's PEs, there's all these other items. My major concern is that, you know, there is no, quote, team leader of each patient. It sounds like it's kind of a blend, but that somebody is there to properly triage that patient if that patient starts having all these secondary issues. And you brought up the emergency department, which is true. But I just want to make sure that that mechanism is implemented so if this type of unfortunate situation happens again, there is a mechanism in place with even within your own charting and within your own medical care. I understand you're an employee of the clinic, but that you have the ability to discern that, you know, I need to do this and I need to do that.
I see your points, and absolutely, I can say honestly that I've absolutely referred patients to the ER before with concerning things, whether that's from the clinic or on call. And so this is, like I said, this is absolutely a unique situation where the patient ultimately, what the ultimate demise was. But I see your point there, and I can say honestly, I have made that clinical decision to refer a patient and escalate them to the ER.
And then it's your responsibility once they do present to ED, ER, to inform most likely the charge nurse what they're coming in for so that they're aware of the issue that's going on. So obviously if it's dyspnea, et cetera, that's going to be triaged, you know, immediately once you get through the door, but that somebody is in communication so that these instances don't happen again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I, once again, honestly can say I have absolutely called ahead to the ER and discussed the charge nurse in circumstances that need to be referred to the ER.
And Dr. Pio, if you had nothing further, what I think I'm going to do is ask if KC's got the complaints on the line.
Nothing further from me.
Is the complainant on the line?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I can.
Okay, so I am RC, and I'd just like to say a few things. Number one, I've heard that Dr. Awesome advised me to encourage me to come in when my wife, Casey, was in extreme pain. You know what? That is an absolute lie. I was never, ever encouraged to come in on that day. So I'm afraid, Dr. Petit, somebody is doing a CYA here, and I'm offended by that. Given the countless communications and outreaches that I attempted to make, I would have been there in a minute. I was told that we would be meeting on the Friday, so 48 hours after the procedure, not 24. So please, somebody is making up some excuses here to cover themselves. And Dr. Osmond, I've never spoken with him, and I was never encouraged to come into Invita 24 hours after certain procedure. So that is number one, please. My second comment would be that no imaging, PET scans or otherwise, were done for my wife, Casey, in advance of her procedure. To me, that would have been a wise thing to do, because as it was clear her liver tumors were advancing quickly when I incurred the cost and got the autopsy done. As you've read the report, her liver had been consumed largely by the cancer. And to be blunt, she really was not a good candidate for that procedure, would not have been if imaging had been done in advance. So to me, that's a major flaw in the procedure and ensuring the patient is a good candidate. And my third comment would be, and I think that's all, you know, largely evident in my report, is the communication has been appalling, largely post-procedure, but I was reaching out to Dr. Aga's nurse. She was encouraging me to contact Invita. I was speaking to the patient care coordinator at Invita. You know, I was being bounced around a lot. And fundamentally, I'm still flabbergasted that I was, you know, entrusted. I picked up my wife, Casey, after that procedure, and I was to be her nurse, essentially, for 48 hours. That, to me, made no sense. And then finally, my comment and my question when I met with Dr. Petit was, who was ultimately responsible for Karen's care? And he told me Invita was ultimately responsible for her care. So that's why I have submitted this, my response, and I've identified Dr. Petit, because ultimately you are the one, sir, that we entrusted with Karen's health with. So that's about all I have to say right now. Thank you.
RC, hi, it's Dr. Sadlick. I have a quick question for you. Were you clear of who was managing your spouse's care?
Post-procedure, when I picked up my wife, I was advised that I should reach out to the nurse if I had any questions. This is Dr. August, nurse. But I was also encouraged to call Invita. You know, I was never given one name or a contact. So my frustration, you know, in the first 6 hours after her procedure, so this is May the 5th, was the inability to get in contact with just about anybody. So I've had to resort to texts and I had to resort to emails and what have you. So that was the frustration that I had. I was kind of given, well, you could call so-and-so or so-and-so if they're not around or so-and-so. So no, not one clear person was ever identified to me to be that point person, the leader, as one of you have mentioned earlier.
What would you have preferred to have seen in terms of the communication that would have been made clearer for you during the difficult time?
Yeah, you know what, quite frankly, what I think would have been best, and Dr. Petit indicated to me that their procedure had changed right after the incident with Casey, was actually to have had, at a minimum, a home care nurse. Because I'm a geologist, you know, so did my best. I was with her, but Dr. Kaufman, I guess, if he was the doctor on call, was, you know, asking me, well, what's your blood pressure? What's your pulse? And, you know, I'm thinking, geez, you're asking me questions that really I don't have great answers to. I can measure her pulse, but you know, the fact that she was released into my custody was just mind blowing. But you know, I assumed that this would be fine. I was told that pain was to be expected. So I guess my long winded answer to the question is just somebody taking ownership at least for the first 24 hours or 36 hours following that procedure, just to ensure that she was fine. I mean, just to basically have me pick her up as I did in a wheelchair, slide her into my rental car and to drive back and to, you know, attend to her for 36 hours before she passed. That was just mind blowing that she was released into my custody. So.
Thank you. Dr. Papil, questions for the complainant?
I don't at this time, Dr. Sadler.
Ms. Tippett, questions for RC?
No, not for RC, but circle back around after so that I can ask a question of the physician.
Sure. Ms. Gallen, questions for RC?
Nothing right now.
Dr. Campbell.
Nothing right now.
Okay. Dr. Stack, questions for RC?
I don't have anything for Mr. Affy. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, RC. I appreciate you being on the line.
Mr. Chair, members, this is Justin with the AG's office. This is a matter of course, since, you know, the complainant made some statements. I know we already heard a lot from Dr. Petit and his counsel, but I would, just as a matter of course, recommend giving Dr. Petit and or his counsel a chance to just, you know, briefly respond to the complainant's statements.
Thank you. Mr. Williams, do you want to respond, or Dr. Petit?
This is Williams. I'll just briefly state, as far as the conversation about Dr. Awesome, in the records that we provided, it's base number respondent 00, it's respondent 400. When we say that RC spoke with Dr. Awesome, I think that it's more probably appropriate to say that the nurse spoke with Dr. Awesome's, who then reported back to the nurse, then the nurse reported to RC. That's at least how it's written in my response. It's also how it indicated in the chart note. So I don't believe Dr. Awesome's had a direct conversation with RC, and certainly didn't mean to imply that. But the chart notes indicate that the nurse on call would have spoken with RC, taken his information, consulted with Dr. Awesome's, then reported that back. And that was with respect to the medication adjustment for the pain medication. So I don't really have anything else substantive to add. With respect to, you know, I would like to reemphasize that Dr. Aga's the one that was the primary, at least as far as the procedure questions, follow-up procedure, and that we feel like in that Dr. Poteet and his team were there in a supportive role, and that they were generally available to as best possible to answer questions that came up.
Okay.
Yeah, if I may just respond to that, folks. Mr. Williams, that is correct. I spoke with the nurse, and the nurse that afternoon said to me essentially to reduce, eliminate one of the opioids, I gather, and to start a new one. But that was the beginning and the end of our discussion. And just to clarify a comment that Dr. Poteet made earlier with respect to those, I did indeed, one of the opioids I administered to my wife at a frequency that was not recommended. He said 2 hours. I checked my records. It was 3. So that first night, which was just absolutely hellacious for Casey, I did that once, and then I immediately stopped and got back onto the 6 hours. So just want to be clear on that. I did not continue to pump into her something at a higher frequency other than once, and it was 3 hours as opposed to the prescribed 4 or 5, and then I immediately stopped because that was the next morning and I was already in contact with Invita. So I just want to be clear on that.
Thank you, RC.
Dr. Sadlick?
Yeah, let me.
If I have a quick question.
Yes.
A quick one for RC. So at no point was there a recommendation to come in to Invita? And was there a recommendation to go to the ER? Because that's what I haven't been able to see documented, and maybe I'm missing it in the documentation. Was there a recommendation to come in or to go to the ER at any point?
No, there wasn't during that period of discussion. So the second day, so about 24 to 30 hours after the procedure, when I did have a shorter discussion with the nurse, who was then in discussions, I gather, with Dr. Awesome's note, because they had pointed out to me, as I knew very well, we would be meeting the following day, so that would have been May 7th, approximately 48 hours after the procedure. I was told by the nurse or Dr. Aga, again, if things went extremely bad and nobody could be reached, you might want to call 911. I thought, well, that's obvious. And that was a passing comment, but really it was more so you should contact A or B or C or D, like, do your best. So again, no lead quarterback was ever identified.
Okay, thank you. I have a question for Dr. Poteet. If imaging was done and the condition of her liver was determined, who would make the call that the procedure in question would have been contraindicated? Would that have been you, or would it have been the other doctor? Doctor, I can't pronounce his name. Other.
Correct. The phone consultation I had with patient KC, there was recent imaging, and that imaging disc was requested to be sent to Dr. Aga, and Dr. Aga reviewed imaging, and as I understand, Dr. Aga, patient KC, and husband RC met with Dr. Aga via teleconference to discuss the procedure and state that patient KC is a candidate. But to my understanding, the recent imaging she had performed in Canada was facilitated to Dr. Aga. That was reviewed, and that was the basis for treatment and the return to Arizona.
Do you know how recent that imaging was?
I do.
I have to look that up.
Okay.
I can answer.
RC, do you have that? I don't know if it's in our documents.
I do, and I can tell you it was the month of February, and the procedure was in May. And by the time we spoke with Dr. Aga, it's been 2 more months. And we asked him That's not the purpose of the discussion, I understand, but it is completeness. If my wife had several times asked him point blank, am I a good candidate for this procedure? He skirted and danced around that question countless times. When we finished our discussion with him, we looked at each other and said, has he even looked at the imaging, which was done? I could give you the actual date, but it was in February.
Okay. So I was just curious how close it was to the procedure. Yeah. Can I ask, I have a question for Dr. Poteet. With other patients with presenting similar to KC, have you ordered the imaging, like let's say of the liver that may have shown that this was not a good candidate? I mean, have you in the past with other patients ordered, or would that be Dr. Agha's responsibility to order that?
No. Typically, we are ordering imaging and referring that to a Dr. Agha or a Dr. Medina. But yes, that is something that we are commonly helping facilitate the imaging review.
Okay, so for this case that you didn't feel that it was necessary?
Oh, no, that's, like I said, for this case, the phone consultation was in February, and the most recent imaging from that was referred to Dr. Agha, and as I understand, Dr. Agha felt that he needed no more imaging, that he was basing on that treatment. So.
Okay, and the condition of the liver at that point was not severe. Okay. Thank you. That's all I have right now.
Okay. Any board members have any further comments? So let me drop down the list. Let me start with you, Dr. Spatz. Additional comments?
I don't have anything. Thank you.
Dr. Campbell?
Just for my own clarification, Dr. Petit, respective to the February imaging that you received and then the referral that you made over to Dr. Agha, what were you looking for in that imaging that allowed you to make the determination that the patient was a viable candidate for the procedure? And was that a part of your analysis prior to the referral or not?
A good question. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
So essentially, patient Casey did receive a transarterial chemoembolization in the past to liver lesion and responded favorably to that. In fact, if my memory serves me correctly, she had very little pain, was tolerated the procedure very well and got positive response on subsequent imaging. From February, it was determined there was progression of disease in the liver. And so the discussion was on whether or not that procedure could, a chemoembolization could be repeated. And so essentially, as discussed, that imaging, I referred to Dr. Agha to determine if it's safe to perform another chemoembolization, if it's indicated. And so ultimately, that is always the IR's decision. I refer imaging, the IR determines whether or not proceed with procedure, to proceed with further imaging, or anything of that nature. But ultimately, my role is to determine if a patient does have progression of disease, what tools are available to them, what could be considered, and then I'm making referrals from there.
Okay, and so when you were looking at the imaging in February, is that when you made the referral to Dr. Agha, or was that at a later date and time?
No, that was, yeah, from that chart, from that telephone encounter is what we started the discussion about repeating a embolization on the consideration of the return for that. So that discussion was had by a telephone encounter, and then ultimately, yes, patient KC was open to the referral, and so then I made the referral to IMED at that time.
Now, and now I'm speaking generally. Let's take a moment to step away from this case specifically, but with regard to the same disease, is there ever a point where the disease progresses to such a point where the candidate goes from being a good candidate to no longer being a viable candidate due to the progression of the disease and the current stage of the disease? So in other words, maybe in month 1, 2, 3, and 4, great candidate. Month 5, starting to have some concern. 6 and 7, it progresses to the point where the procedure is no longer recommended. And can you talk about that, please?
Yes, absolutely. So I would say the general rules for contraindication for this procedure would be hyperbilirubinemia, jaundice, icterus. Those are all things where we would not expect any benefit of the treatment, you know, more risk than benefits. So that's the main thing with liver. In experience, working with the IR, it's been contraindicated if there are, you know, portal vein thrombi. Ultimately, as I understand it, is that the safety of chemoembolization to the liver through the arterial system has an inherent safety because of the collateral blood flow from the portal vein and its oxygenation. And so if there's any compromise of the portal vein, that can be a contraindication. But in general, it would be the other presenting factors of severe liver disease, any signs of liver failure with hyperbilirubinemia, obstruction. We've also seen contraindications from cholecystitis, polylithiasis are things that have kind of refuted doing a chemoembolization. So yes, there are multiple points where we wouldn't even make the referral in the first place because we would not see any safety, whether or not the IR would. But like I said, if we're not seeing liver failure, other contraindications, if it's just liver pathology from metastatic disease, we've seen that patients can respond favorably to it.
And within that 90-day period from February until the procedure was done, would you at any point for any of the associated symptoms that you just described, could those symptoms, is it possible that those symptoms could progress or present themselves within 90-day period?
Sure, absolutely. That we could see a change of that. With metastatic liver disease, that can change seemingly in hours. And so, as I understand it, the timeline was that the patient scheduled the procedure on a Tuesday. The patient came in on Monday for lab review, nursing assessment, everything before that. To determine if there was any, you know, physical contraindication to the procedure on the next day.
Okay, and with respect to the positive response regarding to the probability that those associated symptoms could hypothetically arise, did you at any time, or would you now, in reflection, should, since 90 days had passed, should somebody have thought about repeating this imaging?
You know, good question. That's something that, as discussed, is we are trying to help facilitate the imaging. And that's something that I, like I said, referred to the IR, and they let me know if there's more imaging. But to my understanding, in this case, that the schedule was made for the actual day of the procedure, that patient was involved, IMED was involved, and there was no indication that Dr. Aga needed any further imaging at that time.
In your review of the pathology report, were there any indication from the pathologist listing or identifying any of the negative associated symptoms that you've just outlined for the board, were any of those mentioned within the mechanism, manner, cause of death that now we can see in reflection that they were in fact present with the patient at the time of death?
So to my knowledge, that's not been presented to me. I've never seen the independent pathology. I know that the EMS team that reported on that night, they did not recommend autopsy. And so husband RC, understand paid independently. And the only thing I know from that pathology is the two quotes I've seen in this investigation. Number one was the burden of disease in the liver. And number two was ultimately the congestion in the lungs. That's the only thing that I know to date about that pathology report.
Okay. I guess my concern is that it definitely seems reasonable that when we're receiving in February of imaging for a procedure that's going to be 90 days out, the imaging should have been repeated prior to the procedure. And I understand that there were labs drawn, but we're all aware that there can be, the imaging is much more favorable with regarding beginning disease that may not be reflected in the blood report. And so that's kind of a concern that I have right now. Mr. Chairman, you go ahead and move on now to somebody else. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Campbell. Some good points. Ms. Gallen?
I'm still just listening and thinking about it.
Okay. Ms. Tippett's going to roll back up to you.
Yes, I have a short question. I mean, Dr. Campbell asked about the pathology, and it sounded like the response was based on what was known about the autopsy pathology. I'm just curious about the pathology that was done the lab work that was done right before the procedure, and if the condition of the liver would have shown up in those lab reports, and if they did. And maybe I don't know, am I asking that clearly enough? It just sounds like if the liver is in a condition that would mean she's not a good candidate, that something possibly could have shown up in the lab work. I guess that it's more of a curiosity question of would you expect the lab work to have indicated the condition of the liver that was then seen later?
So as I understand the question is that I did not see any presentation of jaundice or hyperbilirubinemia before the patient went through to the procedure. And then I guess I don't mean to answer a question with a question, but I don't know if I've heard anything that the pathology report has stated that there's any shown ill effects from the SIPI procedure. All I know is that she did have a burden of disease in her liver, and I know that the potential concern is the congestion in the lungs, but I don't know of anything that said the treatment of the liver is the cause of her death. Does anyone have any information that states that?
I do not. I was just there was a mention that later the condition of the liver was in such a state, and that's when we went down this path of questioning about the imaging. So my question is, I guess, more looking forward, is there anything in lab work that could have possibly shown up? And you answered that you didn't see anything in the lab work that may have caused pause right before the procedure and then been a reason for imaging at that point. So I'm satisfied. It was a curiosity, more of looking forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bibbitt. Dr. Papil?
I don't have any more questions at this time.
It appears to me, and this is where this has become difficult. we've got so many different participants in this particular unfortunate circumstance for RC. We have Dr. Coffin, we have Dr. Poteet, we have Dr. Aguilar, and we have some of the staff members of Invita. So what I'm trying to do, board members, and I'm going to see your direction also, is to come up with some type of closure for this case, for this unfortunate case.
This is Dr. Popiel. Excuse me. I was going to say, I don't, at the end of the day, I don't believe, you know, there was any sort of gross negligence by Dr. Poteet in the situation. I think the questions that I have are, I guess, the referral source, the relationship Invita had with this doctor who's the interventional radiologist, you know, the, what sounded to be like issues with communication already existing with this doctor. I guess my concern is, you know, more so the Invita as a whole, the communication, the relationships they've established with these doctors that, you know, ultimately, you know, led to a negative outcome. So while, you know, I don't believe Dr. Poteet was, you know, negligent in this situation, I also would say that, you know, everything involved kind of rises to me to be a letter of concern of some sort, like a non-disciplinary letter of concern would be kind of my initial thought.
I agree with Dr. Popiel.
Yeah, I agree with Dr. Popiel. Because my concern is that there are so many different players in this, and I agree with you, Dr. Popiel, that it's not as though Dr. Pete did the, you know, procedure, but the somewhat the coordination of this type of therapeutic has to be better than what it was. So I would think it was you, Ms. Tippett, that made the motion for letter of concern.
No, it's Dr. Popiel.
It was Dr. Popiel, and then you seconded.
I was just opening up for communication. I don't know. That was my initial thought. I didn't make a motion yet because I didn't really comment on the reason for that letter of concern. I didn't make it formal, so I just wanted to raise that as my initial thought process to see what the rest of the board had to say.
Dr. Sadlick, this is I have a lot of concerns about the post-procedure communication, like a lot, and I don't think that that's necessarily Dr. Poteet's responsibility per se. It seems more systemic or more just part of the Invita situation and the relationships, like Dr. Popiel mentioned, with the IR and with and just who to call and when and where and the amount of care that RC was responsible for. It seemed too much for the patient's condition. It seems there should have been somebody aware of the whole process and stepping in and guiding and directing. And the fact that there's no documentation saying, you know, bring her in right away. Don't wait till the 7th. Bring her in immediately. Things like that. That's the ball was dropped, in my opinion.
Members of the board, this is David Williams. I just, one thing I think I would want to point out is post-procedure, there are no referrals going to Dr. Aga, in part for some of the reasons that you've already indicated here. The concerns that I have, and I think it's one of the concerns raised by RC is if the procedure, why was the patient not done in, why was this not an inpatient procedure, why was there, and some of the steps post-care as instructed by Dr. Aga's office, I think those do fall on Dr. Aga, and I think they are the subject of a separate concurrent investigation by the osteopathic board. I'm not involved in that. My understanding is that just from seeing some of the literature in this case, that there was a complaint lodged. I don't know the status of that, but but I think that's one of the issues that are being explored vis-a-vis the other complaint against Dr. Aga. But to address the specific, how do we handle this going forward, that's one of the reasons why Invita Medical does not make direct referrals any longer to Dr. Aga. And one of the reasons why Invita Interventional Radiology was created was to help better manage those transitionary issues.
This is Dr. Popiel. I mean, honestly, my letter of concern would be more directed again at Invita, and I don't, you know, necessarily, I understand the position Dr. Petit's in, and I'm not crazy about, you know, necessarily writing a letter of concern under his name and license. However, that may be what we're stuck with, given that, you know, quote unquote, Invita Medical isn't here in front of us today and isn't really technically sanctioned by our board, the physicians are.
Yeah, and I understand what you're saying. And most likely, unfortunately, it's a huge lack of communication because the procedure was performed. RC was put in the position for 48 hours or 36 hours of being his spouse's nurse. He's not trained. And then to try to get a hold of various people throughout the clinic with no roadmap or clear delineation is problematic. And then the patient did originate from Invita to Aga. So it usually will have to go back to whoever referred to Aga, which was Invita. So I see what you're saying, Dr. Pilas. It's within the whole system of that organization. So we need to wrap up this case. Does anyone have a motion they'd like to propose?
This is Dr. Popiel. I'll propose a motion for a letter of concern related to coordination of patient care. I think that's probably as simple as I can say. Coordination and communication of patient care.
Are you on the same thought process?
Yes, I second that.
Okay. Any board members have any further responses? Because I'm going to need to ask Ms. Anthony to do a roll call.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, this is Justin with the AG's office. Just a quick clarification, because the discussion, there was some discussion about Invita generally, and I know Dr. Popiel, you know, sort of got in front of this and said, you know, this is, I understand that we don't, you know, license this. I just wanted to make sure that this letter of concern is particularly related to Dr. Petit and not, you know, the center as a whole, because, I mean, the sole issue before the board is as to Dr. Petit's care.
I still second the motion because I feel like that's who initiated the referral that was the primary point of contact, in my understanding, as far as her care. I understand there's patient coordinators and all of that, but we don't have any say over that. And so I do believe that when someone takes on the care of a patient, that they're there to see it through. And if the institution that they're working for is not doing a good job of coordinating communication, then this is just an encouragement to help that institution do better. And it has to start with somebody.
First, we have a second, and Ms. Anthony, could you do roll call for us, please?
Yes. Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Dr. Popiel?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin is recused. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Thank you, Dr. C.
Thank you, members of the board.
Let's go ahead and, if we could, let's roll through one more and then we'll take a break. Or does anyone need a break at this point? Is everyone good to roll for the next case? I take it that's a yes. Okay. Let's go ahead then and we'll roll on through our next case with Dr. Sears. And Ms. Anthony, could you give us an overview? And that would be case number 21202, Dr. Rory Sears, initial interview.
Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, on September 20th, 2021, the State of Arizona Naturopathic Physicians and Medical Board received a complaint from VC relating to his wife, TC. TC was being treated by a respondent for uterine cancer that had metastasized to her lungs. During a SIPI procedure, the physician performing the procedure allegedly embolized the wrong artery and cut off blood supply to TC's spinal cord. Post-procedure, TC was left paralyzed from her breast down with no bladder or bowel control.
And Dr. Sears on the phone?
Dr. Sadlick, this is David Williams again. Yes, I have Dr. Sears with me.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Williams. Is the complaint online? No. Ms. Anthony, did you hear anything whether the complaint would be
it's my understanding from the complainant that he would not be participating today.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Williams or Dr. Sears, can you give us your viewpoint, your overview?
This is Williams. I'll go ahead and take the point on this one, and then Dr. Sears will certainly answer any directed questions. The patient, as indicated in our response, summarized by Ms. Anthony. Dr. Sears had done some initial work with patient TC. She had initially been referred to Dr. Aga's office in November of 2020. She had initially been referred and had the initial FIPI procedure with TACE done. She had some immediate benefit. The cancer had progressed again into the pulmonary areas of the pulmonary nodules. She came back to Dr. Sears at that point in August of 2021. Invita was no longer referring to Dr. Aga. At this point, when Dr. Sears met with the patient and her husband, there was a discussion about whether she would qualify or whether another SIPI procedure would have been of benefit to her. Dr. Sears advised the TC and her husband that Invita was referring now to Invita IR, which is now run by Dr. David Medina, another board certified interventional radiologist, for whether they would be a good candidate for that procedure. I think there is some statements in the complaint that the only place they could go for that referral was to Invita IR. That is not necessarily what was explained. It was simply explained that Invita was not making direct referrals to Dr. Aga due to some ongoing care coordination issues, one being the prior case. And therefore, they were being recommended to go if they wanted to sit down with an interventional radiologist to go meet with Dr. Medina. And then from that point, Dr. Sears made the referral. The patient and her husband met with Dr. Medina on September 7th, did an independent assessment. Dr. Medina made the independent assessment that the patient was a good candidate for the procedure. The procedure occurred on September 15th. There was an adverse occurrence from the procedure, and that was all related to things that occurred when Dr. Medina was involved in the direct procedure. With respect to the issues vis-a-vis Dr. Sears today. Dr. Sears's involvement was simply to make the referral, and as we discussed in the prior case, the interventional radiologist makes the independent assessment as to the procedure and whether the patient qualifies, and then the actual procedure itself. The adverse occurrence, which is discussed in our response, it's certainly unfortunate. It's not something that would normally have happened. It is a risk of the procedure, although a small risk. And Dr. Medina would tell you, I think, that he had tried to appropriately manage the post-care outcome of the adverse occurrence as best as he could. He was in direct contact with the emergency department, I believe it was Scottsdale Osborne, where she was sent. And he tried to directly manage the care with the emergency department, and there's some other post-follow-up care issues that are more directly addressed in my written response, which I don't think are necessarily germane here. There was a statement made in the investigative report about whether Invita financially benefited and whether there was some sort of pecuniary issue or violation of 32.1501 subsection 31 related to a referral to another entity that has a pecuniary interest. Invita IR is a separately owned facility. Dr. Sears has no ownership interest. Like Dr. Poteet in the prior case, Dr. Sears is a salaried employee of Invita Medical Center. Dr. Medina, I don't know if he has an ownership interest in Invita IR. However, in the Invita IR records that were submitted to the board, the patient was provided with a general consent form, and at the top of that consent form, it did indicate that that Invita IR does have a shared ownership structure with Invita Medical Centers that was disclosed to the patient. It was in the Invita IR records, and the number for that, if you're curious, is EIR 0021. It was signed and initialed by the patient. That consent form was signed on September 7th. So there was a disclosure to the patient as to a common ownership structure between Invita Medical and Invita IR. So that was disclosed to the patient prior to the procedure ever occurring. So while there may have been a financial benefit vis-a-vis the two entities, that financial benefit does not necessarily flow down to Dr. Sears. That's really all I have specifically to address. I will tell you that there is a separate medical board investigation into this matter that is looking at the actual procedure and the actual adverse occurrence. And so those things are being addressed by the medical board vis-a-vis other issues. So I don't really necessarily feel like I can get involved into a lot of the side discussion with that, but I can tell the board that there is a separate ongoing investigation as to the adverse outcome itself. So I'll turn over to the board and to any questions directed to Dr. Sears.
Dr. Sears, how much patient contact did you have? Because I'm reading the complaint, and it says Dr. Sears, at the very end, last paragraph, last sentence, Dr. Sears, who left us no other options but to use their in-house doctor, Medina, should not be allowed to do this to anyone again. How much contact did you have with this particular patient?
Well, I've been treating the patient since November 2020, so very familiar with her TC, BC, and her case. After we had the consult when she returned to Scottsdale, Arizona, and we discussed potential options for her further treatment, and I made the referral to sit down with Dr. Medina to discuss potential treatment options with him. I did not have another follow-up with them prior to that procedure being performed.
Okay.
So it wasn't expressed to me that they felt in any way that they had no other options. When we sat down and had that conversation, I explained to them that we are no longer referring to Dr. Aga, that we do have Dr. Medina, who we're working with, who I have a lot of faith in and has a tremendous amount of experience in his field. My recommendation was that they sit down with him, have the conversation with him about those potential procedures, gauge their comfort level in moving forward, and make a decision if that's something that they want to move forward with or not.
And where do you feel that the obviously the spouse has filed a complaint against you? How do you think that came about?
Well, from my just reading the complaint, BC mentions in the complaint that when he was in the hospital, another physician had mentioned to him that the physicians that were involved in that particular case deserved some form of punishment, which I'm not sure who that physician is. He requested to not be named in that. So his understanding of the case and the procedure and the outcome, I don't know if he has the full picture of the case when you're making that recommendation, but I assume by him saying that BC, understandably in a very distraught position, is angry and decided to move forward with that physician recommendation.
So, in Vito, you were the only physician really involved with her care?
Well, as Dr. Petit discussed earlier, as I was kind of acting as her primary care physician, in that I would do all the follow-ups with her, review all the labs, review imaging, discuss the naturopathic treatment with her. Again, there is a floor doc, and there are after-hours physicians who can have contact with her as well.
Okay. And then have you had any conversation with Dr. Medina specifically right prior to that procedure?
I don't recall any conversations directly prior to the procedure. I did get word from him that after his review of the imaging, that he thought she was a candidate and that he thought he would be able to perform a successful procedure that would benefit her case.
And then the unfortunate incident happened. And then at that point, how were you involved?
My involvement was very minimal after that. When they discovered there was an adverse reaction happening, is I was informed through the third party, a member of the Invita IR staff. They mentioned that Dr. Medina was aware of the situation and that he was taking point on handling her care from there, which involved a call to 911, emergency transport to the hospital, where he would be speaking with the ER physicians to discuss the procedure that took place, and with his knowledge, try and help make recommendations on what her care would need to be at that point.
Dr. Papil, can I run down the list with you since we have Dr. Sears on the phone?
Sure. Dr. Sears, just the allegation that, they were given no other choice. With the cocktail that Invita Medical makes that is administered by the interventional radiologist, do the patients actually have another choice? Like, would you guys prepare that cocktail to be administered by any other interventional radiologist other than who you now are working with?
Well, as you know, we have in the past with Dr. Aga, those decisions are beyond my scope as I can't prescribe many of those drugs, and that's the medical director who is making those prescriptions. And so it's really up to their discretion if they feel comfortable or not working with another physician and transferring those medications to an outside provider. But it's beyond my level of decision making.
Gotcha. So, all right. So, I assume what chances are with the Invita IR, being established that the goal is to maintain, one point of contact for all the procedures moving forward. Is that what you're experiencing at this point in time, typically?
Yes, that is typical for ease of the patient, for patient compliance, for ease of case transfer, and for communication between providers to be at the highest level possible.
Okay. I don't have any other questions right now, Dr. Sadler.
Thank you. Ms. Tibbetts, questions with Dr. Sears?
And maybe this was already answered, but have there been, have you had patients that have used someone different than the IR associated with Invita?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
If a patient has their own interventional radiologist, do you work with another complete, and Ms. Tibbetts asked the question, but will you work with another interventional radiologist?
Yes, and I still do.
Okay, and currently the one that you were working with currently is Dr. Medina.
Correct. He's the primary interventional radiologist at Invita IR.
Okay. Ms. Gallen.
I don't have any questions right now.
Dr. Campbell.
Nothing further. I think all my logical concerns move to the other physician, and of course that's going to be handled by a different board, and so I don't have anything further. Thank you.
Dr. Spatt?
Yes, I just have a few questions from the how long have you been working for Invita?
For just over 3 years and 1 month.
Okay, and how many cases have similar to this, have you referred to Dr. Medina?
Well, Dr. Medina is relatively new with Invita IR, so that would be a lower number, probably around 3 to 5. If you want to expand that out to how many of these cases I've referred for overall interventional radiology, it would be closer to 20 to 30.
Okay. Along that line, now, are you being trained on what criteria to look at to refer to Invita IR on the interventional radiology?
Well, through my experience and seeing multiple cases, certainly I have training to evaluate cases and evaluate cases that could be potentially beneficial from receiving IR therapies. Ultimately, that's up to the discretion of the interventional radiologist whether or not they think that a procedure is indicated. But certainly, I've had a lot of experience evaluating cases and seeing cases successfully treated with IR that I can evaluate them when they do come in.
Okay. And then now, do you get additional training from Invita as well on what to look for?
Yes.
And who usually the one that is there a team leader who train all the physicians at Invita, or who usually give you the guidance?
Yes. Yeah, we have a physician team leaders that usually are spearheading the education portions. We have weekly team meetings where education is provided within a tumor board setting, but also evaluating new research and development, as well as evaluating case studies from all over.
Okay, all right. Thank you. That's all I have, Dr. Sadler.
Okay. Dr. Sears, tell me a little bit about your background.
2013 from Southwest College Naturopathic Medicine. I was licensed in 2014. I started practice on my own, mainly treating chronic disease. I was fortunate to be able to step into a practice that was already established to take over the full patient base, which primarily focused on chronic disease, hormone replacement, and IV therapy, as well as some injectable therapies. I was at that position for around 4 years before I had the opportunity to move to Invita and start my training under cancer as well as Lyme disease.
And was your training in Vita, was it actually through a oncologist or was it through another naturopathic physician?
It was through other naturopathic physicians as well as some of our medical directors.
Okay. And the medical directors, were they naturopathic physicians? Were they MDs, DOs?
MDs and DOs.
Okay. And with that particular patient, is there anything that you think that could have been done that the procedure, unfortunately, and the account of what happened post-procedure to the patient is very disappointing. Is there anything you think that you could have done differently and played a different role in this than you did?
I honestly don't think that I could have. I mean, my role was to try and make recommendations for the patient to meet their wishes. At that point in time, they were desiring continued treatment for her stage 4 leiomyosarcoma to try and extend life and extend quality of life for as long as possible. I made the referral what I believed was a good referral to a physician that I trust in and has a ton of experience working those cases. And so during that time, I believed and still believe that it was in the patient's best interest to at least have that evaluation and consider going through with the procedure because of the benefit it could provide to extension of life and to extension of quality of life.
So you were surprised of the obviously the outcome of the procedure.
Surprised would be an understatement. Shocked, very saddened.
And we don't have the complaint online. Let me roll one more time through our board member list. Dr. Peel, anything you want to add?
Nothing more at this time.
Ms. Tippett?
Nothing at this time.
Ms. Gallen?
Nothing at this time.
Dr. Campbell?
Nothing here, thank you.
Dr. Sadlak, if I could just maybe have one final word on this before the board begins the consideration of resolution. I'm sitting here with Dr. Sears. Obviously, he's having an emotional reaction, as I'm sure everybody could expect from that. I know he feels horrible about the outcome with this patient. That certainly wasn't his expectation when he made the referral to Dr. Medina, nor do I think it was Dr. Medina's expectation of that outcome. While there's a mechanism already in place to address the broader issue as to the procedure itself, and that's being addressed vis-a-vis Dr. Medina directly with his licensing board. My recommendation and our request to the board would be to dismiss the complaint as to Dr. Sears. There's simply his involvement with this was simply passing, making a recommendation to the patient to go meet with Dr. Medina, have an evaluation. He charted it. He indicated it in the notes. The patient was then referred to Invita IR. There was a evaluative process. There were consent forms that were signed, and then ultimately the actual procedure with the unfortunate outcome that was presented. But there doesn't seem to be anything here that would indicate that Dr. Sears engaged in a violation of 32-1501-31. And we would request the board consider a dismissal of this complaint.
And I appreciate your income, your statement, Mr. Williams. But let me roll to Dr. Spatt, and then we can get this surmise for you. Dr. Spatt, do you have any more comments?
No, I don't think I have. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. And I agree with what you're saying, Mr. Williams. It's really, really unfortunate because now we have someone that's paralyzed. I realize that Dr. Sears didn't do the procedure, and it's an unfortunate, put it mildly, it's a sad outcome. So I'll make a motion. And Dr. Sears, it's really important to have that communication between all of the providers there, whether they're interventional radiologists, whether they're in a different division, so that coordination and that really intricate piece doesn't keep happening with that organization. Because these are two complaints we see within a year. I don't know if you're going to have a joint meeting with the organization, but that would be my suggestion.
Yes, sir. Those talks are already happened and are continuing to be ongoing as we continue to evolve the process to maximize patient safety and positive outcomes.
And Dr. Satellite, the other, Invita has hired outside counsel. There's a review process ongoing. I can't disclose that for confidentiality reasons. But there is certainly an evaluative process going on vis-a-vis both of these cases, although I think the cases involve two different things. The prior case obviously was a post-care coordination issue. I think this case directly involves an adverse occurrence, and I don't know that. And then with respect to the follow-up of that adverse occurrence, Dr. Medina, at least as indicated in the chart notes that we've seen, was directly involved in contacting paramedics and then trying to work with the treating the emergency responding physicians at Scottsdale Shea. So I don't know that that really is a care coordination issue as to that. I think that's more just an adverse occurrence, and how do we address that to make sure those types of risks are minimized going forward. And I can tell you that those evaluative processes are ongoing both internally and externally with other consultants.
Board members, does anyone want to make a motion on this case? I'll make a motion then that I'll make a motion for dismissal. And any other comments from board members? I need a second motion.
This is Dr. Bopi. I'll second my motion.
And Ms. Anthony, can you have a roll call on this, please?
Yes. Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Dr. Popio?
Aye. Sorry.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin is recused. Motion carries.
Motion carries. It's exactly 2:00. Let's go ahead and do a 10-minute recess, and we'll begin back up on case number 21204, and we'll reconvene at 2:10.
Members of the board, thank you for your time today.
You're welcome. Thank you.